Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Julie Ellenbecker, president of Ellenbecker Investment Group. EIG believes in the importance of education, allowing people to gain the knowledge to feel confident in their personal decisions. This show highlights the unique financial perspectives of its many guests, including economists, attorneys, book authors, business owners, and tax professionals. It is provided for general information purposes only and does not consider your particular investment objectives or financial situation and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for you. Before acting on information on this show, strongly consider seeking advice from your own financial advisor. The opinions expressed on Money Sense do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Ellenbecker Investment Group employees and leaders. Please enjoy today's show.
Money Sense is brought to you by Ellenbecker Investment Group, four-time recipient of the Better Business Bureau Torch Award for business ethics and integrity. Ellenbecker Investment Group is the only Wisconsin investment company to receive this prestigious award more than once by providing exceptional planning and extraordinary service each and every day. Go to ellenbecker.com and listen to Money Sense Saturdays at 2 and Sundays at noon.
Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Sandra Geisler, Director of Tax Planning for Ellenbecker Investment Group. Ellenbecker Investment Group is located in Pewaukee, just north of I-94, between Highway 164 and Highway F in Ridgeview Corporate Park, and in the village of Whitefish Bay in the Equitable Bank Building across from Winkies. We also service clients in Bonita Springs, Florida. Visit ellenbecker.com for more details. Today, we're going to talk about all things tax. We have the privilege of the entire EIG tax team here today. We're going to have a roundtable discussion, talk a little bit about what we're looking forward to as we prepare 2023 tax returns, some end-of-year planning tips, and then we're going to talk a little bit about what we're expecting for 2024. So join me in welcoming my associate, Ed Henning.
Hello.
And Richard Wallasek.
Hello.
We did a podcast in May or June and talked about all things that we were looking forward to for 2023, and time sure flies, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Now we're doing end of year and preparing for the holidays, and before you know it, it's going to be time to do tax return preparation. So
right around the corner.
Yeah, it's coming up.
Let's get on it. Here we go. All right. I think the first thing that we wanted to talk about today was sort of those year-end planning things. And as we were preparing for our podcast today, we were throwing out some of the things that we've been talking with our clients about. And they're things we talk about every year, but they're important. And they're things that, you know, we want to remind people. And some people maybe haven't had to deal with certain things like RMDs before now. So it's good to just do a review and kind of see where we are with everything. One of the things I wanted to mention, you know, before we kind of got into it, is that we really aren't expecting much in terms of tax legislation. It seems many, many years we are, you know, waiting with bated breath this time of year, anxious for the IRS or the Congress to make a decision about what they're going to pass and not pass for this year. You know, there's really no pending legislation right now. And as time is ticking away to the end of the year, we're really not expecting Congress to have a lot of resources to put things in place. We are coming into an election year, of course, and so we're probably going to be hearing more about some tax talk as we move into 2024 and as we start to hear more about the platforms of the individual candidates. But for now, we're really not planning on, you know, anything, any year-end surprises or, you know, any year-end planning that we're going to have to do pending that legislation. So what we have is what we get now. And so let's talk a little bit about what we're doing for planning. So one of the things we wanted to start with for sure was required minimum distributions. And there was a bit of a change in 2023 on that.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. The age was increased to age 73. Depending on your birth date, it could be 75. And kind of going back to the whole tax law changes, we didn't know about that change until the last business day of last year.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So for all of our planning that we're doing, it's this is what we know. And sometimes things change at the very end of the year for the following years going forward. So, yeah, that's one of the newest changes for this year kind of going forward, is that it's a year later than it used to be. And it's going to be spread out as time goes on here.
Right. So I believe the cutoff is 1960.
It's like
so
a famous, right. famous date here, right?
Right.
What happened
right.
in 1960?
So those of us born after 1960, we get to wait until we're age 75 mm-hmm. to take our required minimum distribution. Everybody else prior that was born prior to 1960, they're required to take it starting at age 73. So Ed, why don't you just tell us real quickly again, what is a required minimum distribution and why does the government want us to take it?
Yeah, so with your tax-deferred assets, you are required by the IRS rules to, you know, take it that required minimum distribution. You know, you've been deferring on tax all this time, but the government, you know, eventually needs their money. So we do have had this in place where now it's, you know, with the age change, it's 73, but every year you're going to be required to take out a certain amount of money out of that tax-deferred account. Based on a factor that the IRS provides. So yeah, it's just something that we're going to, you know, obviously have to take out every year, and it could affect your tax bracket, your tax situation. Anything you can do to kind of reduce that over the years is kind of ideal, but that's RMD in a nutshell.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's roughly 3-4% of the total value of your IRA is kind of what sure. it works out to every year. And I did also want to mention, in case we haven't talked about this before, that the year that you start RMD, so if you're turning 73 this year, it's the first time you're required to draw out of that IRA. You do actually have a little bit of a grace period. So if you've not made the RMD this year and you choose not to, you still can make it for the first 3 months of the following year. So up until April 1st, you can still take the RMD for 2023. Mm-hmm. However, you will then have to take a double RMD in 2024. So you would take sure. your 2023 in the first quarter, and then sometime before the end of the year, you'd have to take a double. So it makes sense in some tax situations.
Right.
If you started RMDs prior to this year, you don't get that grace period. You have to make sure that that distribution is taken by December 31st. One of the changes we did see this year, though, was a penalty reduction from the IRS. That was part of the Secure 2.0 Act that was passed at the end of last year. And the penalty for that has been reduced from 50% for not taking it down to 25%. Additionally, if you don't take the RMD before December 31st and then recognize that you didn't take it mm-hmm. and you immediately rectify that situation, the penalty then will be reduced to 10%. Mm-hmm. So in other words, if you find the mistake and fix it, 10%. If the IRS finds the mistake and fix it, it's a 25% penalty. So that was a nice reduction as part of the Secure Act as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. What other things are we talking about for some year-end planning?
Do we have inherited required minimum distributions on the table as well?
Well, it depends, doesn't it?
It does.
You know it.
Absolutely.
Let's talk a little bit about that.
Sure. I mean, there has been speak that you're supposed to take it, and then that has not necessarily been codified or turned into tax law that you absolutely must take an RMD from an inherited account.
And again, we're talking about inherited IRAs from decedents who passed after January 1 of 2020 mm-hmm. and had started required minimum distributions
exactly.
prior to them passing. That's the gray area right now. For the last 3 years, the IRS has waived the penalties mm-hmm. on RMDs for that and has promised us some additional guidance so that we were clear on whether we were required to take an RMD from those accounts or not.
Right, and so far the clarity is that we have no requirement for the first 2 or 3 years now, with the expectation that we might have a requirement going forward.
Correct, correct. For decedents prior to January 1 of 2020, there is an RMD in mm-hmm. place. That yep, did right. not change with the legislation, mm-hmm. The original Secure Act that went into effect on January 1 of 2020.
Right. So it really kind of shrinks that window that we have to deplete that IRA account, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And one of the things we get questions on a lot is Roth conversions. And so as long as we're talking about RMDs, we wanted to make sure that we let everybody know that you cannot convert your RMD to a Roth. You have to take it outright.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You don't necessarily have to spend it. You can reinvest it. You just can't put it back into your Roth IRA.
From the inherited account, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Or your own traditional IRA. You can't convert your RMD.
Correct.
Right.
All right. Good. So let's talk a little bit about Roth conversions. So that's a year-end planning tool that we might want to look at, and we might have a little bit of time left to execute.
I think the clock is ticking here, right?
The clock is ticking.
All the custodians are going to have a hard cutoff here, right? They've got volume, they've got processing, and we don't have much time left until year-end here.
Yep, but maybe we have a little bit of time to sneak it in, if it makes sense.
Right.
Ed, talk a little bit about, you know, what situations we might see that look like a Roth conversion would be a good idea to accelerate income into this year?
Yeah, so it really depends on which tax bracket you're in, but we're basically converting our tax-deferred assets over to the tax-free Roth. Once you convert that money grows tax-free. You never have to pay tax on that money again. So, you know, with the RMD in consideration, anything we can do to reduce that tax deferred balance, this is definitely a way to do that. When we don't have wages, when we get to retirement, that's, you know, kind of the golden years of tax planning, as Richard would say. So the opportunity when we don't have those wages is to potentially flip that tax bracket with those Roth conversions. So, you know, we do have, if you're in the 12% bracket, your income's at, you know, 50,000. I think the top of that 12% bracket goes up to 90,000, and that's based on your taxable income. So that might give you the opportunity to put $40,000, convert that over to the Roth tax free. You do pay the tax in the year of conversion, but once it's paid, it's taken care of. So definitely a good opportunity to, as far as, you know, year end tax planning, to, you know, reduce that tax deferred balance, lock in that lower tax rate, as we're in historical low rates right now. So
I like that word, opportunity. It is an opportunity. You get to pick and choose how much or how little.
Right.
And the essence is you lock in today's tax rates.
Yeah. And so for sure, when we're looking at people that have room in that 12% bracket that you were talking about.
Right.
That's the sweet spot.
That's the sweet spot. Yeah. That bracket really should be used up with any opportunity you have to accelerate income into there.
Sure.
Good. Let's talk a little bit about charitable giving. That's the time of year that we're, you know, looking to do some extra giving in this holiday season. So we have a couple different ways of doing charitable giving. One is, you know, outright, of course.
Right.
But folks who are over the age of 70 and a half have an additional opportunity that the rest of us don't have.
Yeah, it's awesome, right? You can give to charity tax-free. Take out a distribution from the IRA, it goes straight to the charitable organization, and it does not pass through the federal tax return or the state tax return. So what that means is there's no threshold to give a minimum amount out in order to deduct it, as if you were to itemize your deductions. So dollar for dollar, you're saving federal and state taxes if it's a qualified charitable distribution. Otherwise, beyond that, you pretty much have to look at gifting from your checking account, potentially bunching up your gifts to aggregate a large number so that you can deduct it.
Yeah, and we have been working with clients recently who have been giving securities to their charitable organizations.
Sure.
And we love that from a tax planning perspective as well, because if we have especially highly appreciated securities in our portfolio, we don't want to sell those, create the cash and the capital gain and the associated tax liability just to do our giving. A more tax efficient way to do that is to actually give the security in kind to your charitable organization, and then let them deal with the capital gains on their end.
Right.
You get a deduction for the current fair market value of that security, and you don't have to pay tax on the capital gain. So it's kind of a win-win.
Yes, I was going to say that. It is definitely a win-win, right?
Absolutely. So if you're inclined to do some giving, let's get that done.
Right.
There's a one timing difference that I wanted to point out with regard to the difference between charitable giving on an after-tax basis and charitable giving from your IRA. Charitable giving from your IRA must be cashed. The check must be cashed,
right,
by the organization for it to count for 2023. The flip side of that is if you are writing a check from your regular checking account, from any kind of an after-tax account. All you have to do is write the check prior to January or December 31st. It does not necessarily have to be cashed for you to count it as a deduction. So slight timing difference on those two.
Well, that got me to thinking here, too, that, that qualified charitable distribution also goes back to our last topic, required minimum distributions. That donation to charity also counts towards the RMD.
Great point.
Great point.
So there's another win-win in the realm of tax savings.
Absolutely. So if you have a very large RMD, one of the ways to whittle that down a little bit from a tax perspective might be to do some giving.
Mm-hmm.
Great. There's a couple other things. These are things that we wanted to talk about. They're technically year-end planning, but we've got a little bit of extra time to make them happen. So things like IRA contributions, for example, are not due until April 15th. Contributions to SEP IRAs are not due till April 15th. So we have a little bit of time if you have to prepare your tax return or aggregate income for different thresholds.
Sure.
We have time to kind of do all that before we have to make those contributions. So something to think about, not necessarily anything that has to be enacted before December 31st, but we want to keep in mind that we have the opportunities because you're not going to hear from us again before April 15th. So Roth IRA contributions, regular IRA contributions, what other things do we have until April 15th to take care of for 2023?
Yeah, so you also have the HSA, FSA, I believe that would be another thing as well. And then EdVest, any you know, college 529 savings plan, you do have until April 15th to contribute to those to get that Wisconsin deduction.
And if you're listening from out of state and you're due 529 plan options, make sure you check with your individual plan to see if they have that additional grace period. Here in Wisconsin, our EdVest plan does allow contributions for the current year up until April 15th of the following year. But you're going to want to check your individual plans on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some states are not as tax-friendly that way.
That's right.
Right.
Another great benefit of living in Wisconsin, you get snow and this EdVest extension.
All right. Well, with that, I think we'll wrap up this segment and remind you that we'll be back after a short break. Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Sandra Geisler, Director of Tax Planning at Ellen Becker Investment Group. I'm joined today with Richard Wallasek and Ed Henning. Together, we make up the EIG tax team, and we're talking about all things tax today, 2023, 2024, and maybe even some things about beyond that.
Yeah, we don't do just tax planning here. It's almost like projection or fortune telling or forecasting or
whatever. That's right. That's right. We just finished up a few weeks ago. We did a live seminar where we talked about some of the new things for 2023 and the things that we're planning for 2024. We would love to have you join us next year. We try to do that on an annual basis here in our education center. And one of the things that we talked about in detail was 1099-Ks. 1099-Ks are basically tax forms that we were expecting lots and lots and lots of people to get this year. They were talking somewhere in the neighborhood of about 50 million or so were going to go out. And those are from typically third-party payment providers, PayPal, Venmo, all of those kinds of organizations that do money transfers. Prior to about a week ago or 2 weeks ago, the threshold for sending out those 1099-Ks was $600 or 20 transactions. So that means if you and, you know, your friends or your siblings are transferring money back and forth, you know, on a fairly regular basis, it might be that you had more than 20 transactions and more than $600 flowed through. And individuals were going to be getting 1099-Ks. This is really the IRS's way of trying to track some of the cash that happens with different types of self-employment income, Uber drivers, things like that, people who are not necessarily having their income tracked. And so we were talking a lot about how how to correct that, what to do if you get one, all of those things.
Oh, yeah, we had an in-depth conversation, a riveting conversation about what's going to happen.
Right.
And then things changed.
Right. So about 2 weeks ago, the IRS came out and said, yep, we're gonna waive that again for 2023. And we're also going to suggest that maybe in 2024, we're going to raise that threshold considerably. Mm-hmm. So we're going to wait for more guidance on that in 2024. But I know we talked about that on the radio show in May and June, and again at our live seminar that we did. And then the IRS comes and surprises us. And so we're in the tax world kind of used to all of that. But we wanted to make sure that everybody that's listening knows that it's probably more unlikely at this point that you're going to see those 1099 Ks. So everybody can take a sigh of relief now because we don't have to deal with that. Mm-hmm. One of the other things that we're looking at as we continue to talk about things in 2023, on the Wisconsin side, those of you in Wisconsin, one of the things that we're a little bit excited about is that we will no longer have to be making adjustments for capital losses in Wisconsin. So the capital loss limitation on the federal return has been $3,000 for just about ever, I think.
Sure.
And has always been $500 in Wisconsin. So if you took the $3,000 loss on your federal return, we had to add $2,500 back to your income in Wisconsin. And starting in 2023, we no longer have to do that. So so that's a little bit of an increase for those of us in Wisconsin.
Yeah, I haven't figured out who's more excited, tax preparers or the people paying the taxes.
Yeah, well, I think we're all excited about that. We've got some new energy credits this year, too. So somebody want to jump in and tell us a little bit about those energy credits that people might be able to take advantage of?
Yeah, so the Inflation Reduction Act came out with a couple of different credits that are available for residential energy home improvements. First one being the Energy Efficient Home Improvement Credit. So there used to be a $500 lifetime limit. So you kind of have to, you know, fetch your prior year returns to see, you know, if you've taken this credit in the past. We don't have to worry about that anymore. We now have a new annual credit, so no lifetime credits, an annual credit, and they bumped it up to $1,200. So that's pretty exciting. They also have a kind of a separate credit limit for heat pumps and biomass stoves and boilers. Just an FYI, so these energy tax credits are not refundable. So we have to have tax liability to be able to take that credit. I just wanted to point that out.
And how much is the credit for the boilers?
That was $2,000.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And then there's some other credits for things like exterior doors and
windows and such.
Right. So that's the two separate credits that they have. The other one's called the Energy Efficient Home Credit, Residential Clean Energy Credit and the Energy Efficient Home Credit. That first one does give you that 30% credit for qualifying home improvements, but it does have an annual dollar limit on certain things, such as home energy audits. That's $150. Exterior doors, $250 per door, things like that. Windows, there's a $600 credit there. So, everything adds up, but you do have that $1,200 limit each year. And then that second credit, we do have the Residential Clean Energy Credit. That's more of the, you know, solar panels, things like that. So you do get that 30% credit. Let's say you have solar panels installed. That's maybe $30,000. 30% of that's a $9,000 credit you can take on your return this year. So it's definitely a nice opportunity for the new, you know, Inflation Reduction Act changes on the home energy.
They're kind of getting a little bit more stringent on some of those requirements, too. I was reading about the home energy audit. And it's like the first year, the home auditor doesn't necessarily need certain certifications or anything. But after that, they need to be certified. They need to sign a report. They need to do this, that, in order to be able to take that as a deduction.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about second homes? If you've got a little cottage up north or a condo down in Florida, and you want to make some of those home improvements to your second home.
Yeah, so that's actually available for certain things. I think it's, if I kind of remember off the top of my head here, central AC, water heaters, furnaces, things like that are eligible. If you have that second home, you can still get that credit, as well as the solar, you know, solar heating properties, small wind energy, things like that.
Okay. Okay. So if you're doing some of those improvements to a home that is not your primary residence, make sure you check the regulations on those to see what qualifies and what doesn't. But
absolutely.
Or see your tax preparer.
Or call your tax preparer, right? Awesome. Richard, fill us in a little bit on the electric vehicle credits that we're expecting this year.
Yeah, I mean, this year, your top end of the tax credit is $7,500, depending on the make and the model and depending on what those boundary minerals and the full final assembly and everything. For 2023, that tax credit it comes back to you in the form of filing your tax return and claiming that credit.
And how much is it can you get for an electric vehicle?
It depends on the make and the model, up to $7,500. Some of them are about half that.
Okay.
In 2024, there's a major change where you can shift that tax credit to the point of purchase. So depending on if your income is within the thresholds, that can reduce the purchase price. You transfer the credit to the dealership. There's a whole process and like a sale activity report that the dealer will create at that point in time. And then it helps to reduce the overall cost. You get the credit at that point in time instead of waiting to file your tax return in, say, 2025 now. So things are moving in a general direction of more speedy reception of that tax credit. And we'll kind of wait and see what other makes and models qualify for it. Otherwise, I know electric vehicles are a very large purchase. People tend to spend lots of time researching to figure out what's the best or what fits the budget and everything else. So there are multiple resources available online where you can check the VIN to make sure it qualifies. You can check other databases to confirm that your make and model qualifies for X number of dollars as a tax credit. So you almost know the answer before you make that purchase of what tax credit you can expect to receive.
Okay. So what I'm hearing you say is the internet's going to be a great resource for determining whether the vehicle you want to purchase is going to be eligible for that credit.
Yeah. I mean, there's fueleconomy.gov. They're a governmental run website. They're going to tell you yes or no if it qualifies and how much that tax credit is.
Okay. Perfect. So you don't have to run out and buy that electric vehicle yet this year because we still have the credits available
going forward.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you want to buy your spouse that little extra Christmas gift, maybe a EV is something you want to look at this year, huh?
Absolutely. I mean, I hear they make bows big enough for cars nowadays. I see it on commercials all the time.
There you go. There you go. All right. Well, I think that's going to wrap up what we wanted to just point out for changes in 2023. We'll be right back after a short break. Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Sandra Geisler, Director of Tax Planning at Ellen Becker Investment Group. And I'm here with Richard and Ed. And this segment, we want to talk a little bit about 2024. As we turn the calendar here in a couple weeks, we've got some new things that we're expecting for 2024. As always, we get some nice cost of living adjustments. The last few years, of course, we've seen rather large cost of living adjustments. Social Security, not quite as large for 2024 as we saw in 2023, but we are going to be getting a 3.2% increase to Social Security benefits starting next year. Medicare premium costs have gone up roughly about $10 per month at the base level.
I did the math on that one. It's about 5.9% of an increase.
There you go.
I was curious about it, and depending on your perspective, you're like, oh, it's $10. Otherwise, you're going to go, oh, shoot, it went up 5.9%. That's pretty significant, right?
That is pretty significant. Wow. You know, the standard deduction actually went up about $1,500 from 23 to 2024. And depending on your tax bracket, you know, that could be a pretty sizable tax savings. We also saw cost of living adjustments to the actual tax brackets themselves. And I think, again, they're not as large as they were in 2023. But I think they're still going to be impactful for people as we, you know, look at people's tax liabilities over the course of the year. There's a very, very small reduction in the Wisconsin state tax for 2024 as well.
Yeah, isn't it minuscule?
It's minuscule, like, but it's in the right direction.
Yeah,
so,
that's good.
What other things are we talking about in terms of 2024?
So we do have IRA contribution limits as well. I think that went up about $500 so if it was $6,500 for age under age 50, it's $7,000 now. And then if it was, you know, if you're over that age 50, you do get that catch-up contribution amount of $1,000. So you could, you know, potentially, if that's, you know, I guess $8,000 next year. So it's a nice opportunity to fund that Roth IRA, or, you know, if it works out for you to do the traditional IRA, that works too. So
For that catch-up, wasn't there speak of putting the Roth component of a 401k only into the Roth vehicle for
yes.
that catch-up portion? And
yes.
I think they stretched out that requirement for when it should start, right?
Yes. I believe that was supposed to start January 1 of 2024, and they have deferred that at least a year.
1 year, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So what that means is if you're contributing to a Roth 401k...
like the catch-up portion.
The catch-up portion can still be in the Roth.
Correct.
Okay.
Or even vice versa. If you were not participating in the Roth, you're doing all pre-tax... that catch-up portion was supposed to go into that Roth bucket, but
yes.
it's no longer required to be
correct.
Put into it. So that's something we'll have to keep an eye on for when we'll have to incorporate that into tax projections.
Exactly, sure. exactly. Another thing that went up next year is the annual gift exclusion. So this year you can give up to $17,000. Without any kind of gift tax issue or gift tax filing issue. That exclusion amount has gone up to $18,000 in 2024. And that's the third or fourth year in a row we've seen a $1,000 increase there. So
sure.
mm-hmm. if you're looking at giving away part of your estate, you absolutely want to take advantage of that exclusion amount.
Yeah, give sure. it away. Tax-free, right?
Yeah, tax-free. No right. no tax to the receiver or mm-hmm. the giver mm-hmm. in that situation. If you give more than $18,000, of course, there's no tax at this point either.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
We don't worry about that until after you pass away and we determine the total value of your estate. But we do have a requirement mm-hmm. to file a tax return to
sure.
let the government know that you did give away part of it before you passed away.
Mm-hmm.
Other updates for 2024, things that we're watching. We've got some Secure 2.0 changes that are going into effect in 2024. We're going to keep our eye on that as we wait for additional guidance. One of the things that we talked about in detail the last time we did the radio show was the potential of converting sort of the leftover EdVest
oh, sure.
funds
yeah.
potentially to a Roth IRA. And there were some requirements about that in terms of how long the account had to be open and how much
yeah.
could be transferred and what those rules for contributions look like. But we're still waiting for some guidance on that, but we're excited about having that opportunity coming up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good. In our final segment, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the things going on with the IRS, as well as looking forward, even past 2024. So we will be right back after a short break. Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Sandra Geisler, Director of Tax Planning at Ellen Becker Investment Group. And I'm joined today by the rest of the EIG tax team, Richard Wallasek and Ed Henning. In our final segment, we wanted to talk a little bit about all things IRS. I know we get a lot of questions as we're meeting with clients on a regular basis. You know, how are things in terms of the IRS backlog, and how is it going with the hiring of the 87,000 auditors that they were planning
right.
and things
mm-hmm.
like that? So we thought it would be interesting to give you a little bit of information about what we know, at least, about what the IRS is doing and how they're spending some of those funds. You might recall that during COVID, we had a bill that passed called the Inflation Reduction Act, and that also known as IRA, by the way, has nothing to do with retirement. Yeah, right? Has nothing to do with retirement accounts. But in that, there was a considerable amount of funding for the IRS, and they were to use that money to clean up the backlog, to improve their customer service, and to modernize some of their systems. And the IRS actually has been doing a really good job, I think, this year of talking about how they're using those funds. Mm-hmm. One of the things that people tend to remember the most is that they were going to hire 84,000 agents to do audits. That got a little bit of backlash from the general public. But they have not given us any updates as to how that hiring is going, by the way, that I've heard. But I do know one of the things that they're really working on is a lot of digital initiatives. So prior to this year, you know, we had to really do all of our correspondence with the IRS either via a phone call or via mail, which is, it gets a little bit cumbersome and honestly did add to a lot of the backlog that the IRS had. This year, we've seen some really interesting digital initiatives. We're almost to the point where we're going to be required to have an online account as taxpayers with the IRS so that we can communicate with them. But Richard, you were just talking about some of the IRS notices that are coming out.
Yeah, I mean, the notices nowadays, they'll have a little code in the bottom corner of the letter, and it'll be, say, an upload code or a verification code, which means you can go to the IRS website, you can correspond to them in a digital manner according to that code, and then you no longer have to have a letter sent through the mail in order to deliver that message. So it's going to speed up the time to send what they need and also to hear back. So that kind of goes back to, well, perhaps we may need to start having profiles with the IRS.gov website just so that you can correspond back and forth and also see the status of your tax return and kind of have a digital profile with them nowadays, kind of like you have a profile for every application or retailer that you use online. You'll just have a login for the IRS going forward because that's how you can communicate with them.
Right, right. There's a large number of forms now that they're letting us electronically sign.
Yeah. Oh,
right. So that's another bit of a digital initiative. And I think they're really signaling that that's the wave of the future. That's
paperless,
how,
right?
Paperless, yeah.
Right.
I mean, it's been 20 years that we've been, at least, electronically filing returns. So I think it's really good that the IRS now is starting to use more of the technology that's not only available, but that people have become more comfortable with.
You kind of come to expect it. It's like 2023 for the year. I mean, you can talk to the bank electronically, you can talk to retailers, or, you know, you can start chats online, and you kind of expect that with every product that you use going forward.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And so we really think that that's sort of the wave of the future with the IRS. They have reduced a lot of the backlog from COVID, but there is still some backlog. So if you are still continuing to deal with some issues as we are from 2020, 2021, or even before, I just would suggest you just continue to stay on those. And at some point, the IRS will work through it all.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other things that they've done is they've really improved the Where's My Refund update. Is a website where you can go to look for information about your refund after you filed your tax return. Now they're going to give you some additional information other than, yes, we have your return
right.
And here's
processing.
Your refund.
Yeah
right, so they're right. They've enhanced that quite a bit. That's a very well used website. So if you've used that in the past, know that this year you should be able to get some additional information on that. And then also, Ed, another unique initiative that they're working on this year is Direct File.
Yeah, so that's another opportunity for us to advance in this digital age with the IRS here. So basically, you can do a Direct File through the IRS website, and you don't have to go through that third party, you know, using a TurboTax or a Tax Act, things like that. You can just do a Direct File on our IRS website.
Yeah.
So they are, you know, advancing that opportunity. So
they're prototyping that this year. And so not all of the states are eligible. So
okay.
I believe there's 10 or 11 states. Wisconsin is not one of them this year. But as we've seen, I think that's sort of the wave of the future.
Sure.
We're one of the few countries that don't have a direct file program.
Right.
So it's great to have that option for people who have, you know, simpler tax situations.
I was going to say, it's pretty limited, right? You have to have a relatively straightforward tax situation there.
Right, right. But all in all, I think the IRS is moving in the right direction.
Oh, absolutely.
And we're looking forward to the initiatives that they'll be expanding on in 2024. We talked a little bit about 2024 already, but I think the one thing that we really want to talk about as we even look past that, as we look past the election, is to remind everybody about sort of the sunset of all of the tax code that we have in place right now. So in 2018, we had the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. That increased the standard deduction, significantly reduced the tax rates, expanded the tax brackets, eliminated the exemption. There was some pretty significant changes on the individual side. And in order to get that passed, they had to put a sunset clause on it. In 2018, it seemed really far away. Mm-hmm. But as we're turning the tables onto 2024, that sunset on December 31st of 2025 is right around the corner. So
that's two tax years.
Yeah.
It's two tax years.
24 and 25.
Yeah. So it doesn't give us a lot of time to plan. Most of the experts are saying we probably won't have much guidance on that until after the new Congress is seated after the election.
Sure.
So we're going to watch that really carefully, but we really want to make sure that we're getting that information out to people so that people aren't surprised when that happens.
Right.
And if it works for your tax situation, that, you know, you're making the good decisions for the next couple of years, that, you know, potentially you're accelerating income or pushing back deductions in anticipation of higher tax rates coming down the road.
Yeah, it goes back to that word opportunity. You have the choice to do your Roth conversions, and if you go at an accelerated pace this year, next year, and the year after, you lock in today's tax rates.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And we're going to be talking a lot more about that the next couple radio shows, I'm sure. So, good. Excellent. April 15th is tax filing deadline this year.
That's a business day, right?
It's a business day. It's a Monday. So
first time in a while,
We've gotten kind of used to the COVID extensions and then the 16th, 17th, 18th filing dates.
Those are my favorite days,
We are back to the official April 15th in 2024. So I know the three of us are going to be really busy from now until then, but we've enjoyed our time with you today. And we'll look forward to talking with you again mid-2024. Money Sense airs on Saturdays from 2 to 3 p.m. and on Sundays from noon to 1 p.m. If you've enjoyed today's show and want to learn more about Ellen Becker Investment Group and our upcoming events, please visit ellenbecker.com or call us at 262-691-3200. As always, I hope that I have made a difference in your personal and financial well-being. Remember, before we plan, before we advise, before we invest, we always listen.